Welcome to Workplace Warrior, drive results without damaging relationships. You will hear unique perspectives on leaders with an uncommon desire for results, who take charge, lead their teams, and accomplish the mission. They are critical for success in our volatile, complex times. Sometimes they are called names like bully and jerk in our current workplace environment. Your host is Jordan Goldrich, co-author of the Amazon bestseller Workplace Warrior, People Skills for the No Bullshit Executive. He is a chief operations officer, a master corporate executive coach, and a licensed clinical social worker. You will get strategies for being completely authentic while you fulfill your commitment to your organization, build positive relationships, and take performance to an even higher level. And now, here's Jordan.
Welcome, everyone. I'm honored to be your host. If you are leading a culture change in your organization, you've probably run into some resistance, some misunderstandings, maybe some other snags. And one of the big obstacles is trust. And to quote a current axiom, perhaps it's even a cliche at this point, is the leader must walk the talk. So what does that mean? Well, culture change requires honest conversation about what's working and what isn't working. And for that to happen, a leader has to be willing to accept negative feedback. Our guest today uses a communication model with leaders who are implementing culture change. And at the heart of that model is the willingness to hear what's not working from your board, from your colleagues, and from the people who report to you, probably from your clients or customers as well. And this is a significant aspect of being what's referred to as culturable. Our topic today is if you can't coach, you can't lead. And our guest is Tom Crane. Tom's an international consultant, facilitator, author, and speaker who specializes in the development of high-performance coaching cultures. He works with leaders and teams to embrace what he calls collegial coaching, which he wants to become the primary method of communication to enhance individual and team performance. The premise of Tom's books, The Heart of Coaching and The Rise of the Coachable Leader, is that a performance-based, feedback-rich culture, coaching culture, more effectively supports an organizational strategy and leads to sustainable levels of performance. And in order to make a coaching culture real, the leader must show up coachable. Prior to founding Crane Consulting in 1995, Tom was vice president of a culture change firm called Sandelaney Leadership. And he worked various management roles with Solar Turbines, which is a division of Caterpillar. He has a BS from Purdue University and an MBA from Drake University. I met Tom through a San Diego State professional development program that I developed and coordinated called Coaching for Organizational Excellence. And I learned his model for framing negative feedback with your positive intention. Very effective. And I've incorporated his model into my approach and cite him in my tip sheet, which is called 3 Steps to Giving Negative Feedback to Reports, Colleagues, and Superiors. And you can get that complimentary at www.workplacewarrior.com. So, welcome, Tom. It's great to have you here.
Great to be here, Jordan. Good to see you again.
Absolutely. It's been quite a while.
I'm not sure we want to talk about how long it's been.
Right. Well, the last time we met, we were both 10, I think.
I think you're about right.
Yeah, there you go. So anyway, how did you end up focusing on coaching, you know, in terms of your culture consulting practice?
Well, thank you. I had worked, as you mentioned, with Sandelaney Leadership out of Long Beach about 8 years. And the thing that we used to teach in a 3-day transformational kind of culture change process was how to give feedback, basically appreciative feedback and constructive feedback, 2 kinds. I've relabeled it coaching shorthand because I think it's something that needs to be done, but it's delivered kind of as a one-liner. What I appreciate about you is I think you might be even more effective if you tried yada, 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 whatever that is. So it's very short, sweet, to the point. The thing that was astounding, Jordan, is that when we would work with an organization on shifting their culture, making it more high performance, making it more nimble, making leadership stronger, increasing teamwork, building trust, all the great things that come out of a culture shifting process, if it's worth its salt, was that leaders got that their job was to coach. You know, and regardless of the stripes they have on their sleeve or their corner office or the view they have or the perks they have, all the trappings of leadership don't mean much if you can't command leadership and people want to follow you.
Right.
And I don't mean to command it and demand it and control it, kind of the downside of the shadow side of being a leader. But the idea was, if they got that the essence of their job was to show up and be able to deliver feedback, they really felt like they were onto something. It changed so many leaders' thoughts about what it meant to be a leader. And it opened them up because they kind of, by osmosis, became a little bit more coachable. I focused more on that specifically in my later years. But initially, when they got that their job was to coach, they transformed relationships. They opened up communications between them and the rest of their team members, which is what leadership is all about. So I focused on that then as I set up my own practice in 1995.
Yeah. And, you know, I just want to highlight that when I sat through your class or participated in your class and learned your feedback model, and it was really, in my mind, it was really for giving negative feedback. You had talked about having a positive intention up front. And the one that I chose for myself was one that I had developed years earlier, which is, I wouldn't be doing my job supporting you if I didn't give you some feedback. Are you open to that? And so I have found that to be very, very helpful. I've also used a couple of other versions of it, one of which I developed later on, which was, I'm kind of in a bind. And that's when you have to say no to somebody who's your superior because your superior is telling you to do something else. So, you know, I'm in a bind and I need your help. I'm here to serve you. Anyway, I'm curious as to whether your approach has changed over the years.
Well, the thing that's changed about it, I would say this, is that I started out with the roadmap, that the circular transformational coaching model, which includes feedback, but I wouldn't. So it's a feedback-based approach to coaching, but it includes a whole lot more than just feedback. It's setting goals and aspirations, expectations, creating a coaching relationship, giving feedback, of course, claiming accountability for how we got into this pickle together. It's a two-way partnership. And then where we end up with the coaching part is, what are you going to do about it? What are your next steps? So that has been morphing a little bit. I've added things to it to make the language around the loop more clear, more specific, and I think more accessible for people. So they say, oh, yeah, I know what that is. I know how to do that, actually. And I think one of the gifts of having the model is it lays out, it's not prescriptive so much as it's meant to be a guide. It's a guide for conversation. So I really think of it as a communications model.
Okay, super, super. Any chance you can recall any specifics or you could give some examples of how that might work?
How what might work?
How giving that feedback using that model.
Oh, well, there's I mean, every as soon as you sit down with somebody and you interact with them, you know, there's feedback present because we see body language, you see how tone of voice, we see how they're doing all kinds of things, the words they pick.
Yep.
The things they choose not to say that you know kind of going on, you just can sense something's going on there. So giving and receiving feedback is an ongoing stream of consciousness kind of thing. The thing that the model causes you to do is to have your feedback be specific. There's actually kind of a companion model that goes with it. I can maybe flash this. You've got a model up on top and the bottom is called a result cycle. The result cycle is what causes people to be specific in the feedback that they give. So it starts with beliefs. My beliefs determine what I do and say, my behaviors. My behaviors have an impact on relationships, including customers and stakeholders, the whole supply chain, colleagues and teammates for sure. And through those relationships, I get results. So the results cycle is going on all the time. And if I'm going to be effective at giving you feedback, Jordan, I'm going to say, Jordan, what I just noticed was that this happened, yada, yada. I'll describe your behavior. So start with behavioral description first.
Sure.
then talk about the impact of that, how it's affected me, how I guess it may be affecting others. I'm not sure, but that's my concern or thought. And this could be a positive valence. It could be a wonderful thing you just did that I want to maybe reinforce. It could be something that I'm not so sure it's going to work out as well as one would hope, right? So, and how I think this is going to affect our business or relationships with our customers on into the results piece. The whole use of the results cycle, again, causes specificity and feedback, and it keeps people away from adding judgments, passing on beliefs, dumping their beliefs or projections onto somebody else, and they're not ready for it. It comes across as an opinion. We're not looking for opinions. We're looking for information, which is based in the behavior that's been experienced or observed. That's what makes it different.
Yeah. Tom, so where can people get a copy of that map?
Well, this is contained in the book, The Heart of Coaching, and I'd be happy to give away, say, 3 books to people who contact me first, mention this podcast. This is underneath the back cover. It's cardstock. It's meant to be a tear out, a job aid, if you will. But basically, this comes with the book, The Heart of Coaching.
Super. And if I understand correctly, they should email you and it's going to be the first 3 people.
Yep. First 3 people who email me and mention this Workplace Warrior podcast.
So what is your email?
It is tgcrane@craneconsulting.com.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure.
You know, in terms of working with leaders around this, you know, what are some of the biggest challenges you've seen leaders face? And, you know, obviously you need to clean it up so that it's confidential, but if you could give some examples of the kinds of things leaders that you've worked with have had to do.
Sure. Well, since this is a communications model, disguised as coaching, sometimes you get a need presented as we need to open up communications. We need to have our leadership team or our management team be more aligned and focus on the same goals. We need to be able to more quickly resolve embedded conflict because we know we've got some departments that don't get along and you've got people at loggerheads, et cetera. Any number of things could be described. Usually they're in the interpersonal domain. It's about relationships, some aspect of that. Conflict, trust, maybe we're not really working as a good team yet. And the leader or whoever contacts me may know that. So they'll present the problem and describe it, and they'll, you know, ask how I can help or how this work that I do helps. And then, of course, as an organizational development consultant, OD consultant, you've got to go in and find out more about what is the issue. You know, you may have a presenting issue, but then you've got to uncover that. So sure. I've got assessments that I use to really understand what their issues are. And then come back, usually offer the transformational coaching workshop so that they have a chance to open up communications. I flashed this model a moment ago. Basically, that is a generic communications model. And anybody who's going to use that methodology or that approach or that roadmap, all they do is they add their content around their issue, around strategic alignment or team building or conflict or whatever they happen to notice. Maybe they're not serving customers well. They've got bad negative feedback from customers. So customers are unhappy with the kind of quality of service that they're getting. That could be the presenting issue. So then this roadmap is something that they basically fill in the blank. You know, what's the content they want to say? What do they want to talk about? This gives them a sense of how to talk about it in a way two people can hopefully hear one another, or a leader and their team can hear and discuss and that dialogue. Thus learning about what's going on and how can they fix it.
Yeah. I want to remind our listeners that the map that Tom is referencing is in his book, The Heart of Coaching, and also that Tom is giving complimentary copies to the first 3 people who email him at tgcrane@craneconsulting.com. So one of the issues that I had as a leader, and I talk about it in my book, how I got fired essentially for being obnoxious, is that I was very, very focused on getting the job done. And I was working 60, 70 hours a week. I was in a fast-growing company. And what I found was when people asked me questions or didn't, you know, things weren't working, I just got really frustrated. And I often felt like, you know, what's wrong with them? And so for me, you know, I had a conversation in my head going on like they don't deserve respect or something like that. Either they don't deserve it, or sometimes it was just out of my mouth before I, you know, the words were out of my mouth and there was a piece of like, I don't have time to, you know, grow up. I don't mean this about you, just, you know, that kind of. I'm curious as to your experience with leaders like that.
I've met some. There are some that are judgmental, ego-driven, egocentric,
yeah.
Arrogant. The way I describe that kind of demeanor, if you will, is being the boss of somebody. Why? Because I said so. I'm the boss. I just do what I said. And they have their judgments and all kinds of things that cloud the relationship, make it toxic, perhaps. Who knows? So the idea is to present the workshop in a way, and this information around shifting from being the boss of people to the coach for people, in such a way as they don't feel like I'm pointing them out. My job is not to necessarily deliver 360 feedback or be the deliverer of feedback to them, because no one else has given it to them. I don't typically see that as part of my job, although sometimes I am involved in 360 feedback. But let them understand that there are implications for how they're being perceived. It's a perception thing, right? I mean,
right.
They just may believe that they have to do that because the business requires it. And you know, it's just like, get over it, grow up. And that's why I'm so take me or leave me. Well, that's not an attitude that really fosters teamwork and appreciation and accountability. It fosters people protecting themselves in a gotcha culture, which is the last thing you really want to have.
Yeah. You know, for me, when I was the chief operations officer of this fast growing company, and listeners who've heard this, I apologize, you've heard this story before. Mm. My executive coach told me that he was going to quit if I didn't do one thing, which was, before I told somebody what to do, ask them why it wouldn't work. And for a variety of reasons, it took me a while to hear that. But finally, I heard it. And when I started doing it, it was amazing to me how much people knew, especially administrative staff, mm-hmm. that I didn't know. And that I realized that there was a system in place and I was responsible for the system. And a lot of what was going wrong was my fault because I'm responsible for the system. So that's when it sunk in that it wasn't that I was going to change my way of speaking because I had to be nice or, you know, whatever. I needed to change my way of speaking because these people knew stuff I didn't know, and I wouldn't hear it if I didn't shut up. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, I have a situation where I lost a job also that was about results. I was working in a automobile dealership of all places. And I was a sales manager doing all kinds of great things, lots of sales training and having people help set quotas and goals for themselves and be more proactive and the way they would work with people once they got into the showroom and even be more proactive, taking cars out to their place of business, whatever. But I was fired because I wasn't getting results. Gosh darn it. Any business has got to focus on having results be the natural outcome of whatever great work you think you're doing. It doesn't really count what kind of great work you think you're doing unless you're getting, you know, some kind of a contribution to the bottom line. So if you can't grow the business, so it resulted in my firing. Another way that a CEO that I was working with in a culture change effort here about 6 or 7 years ago was I was talking with him. We were about a year into the process. And I said something about how wonderful the coaching process was, that it was taking hold and people were beginning to, you know, use the skills more, yada, yada, yada. And he said, Tom, I don't give a blank about coaching. I want blanking results.
I understand.
Hello. Hello. You know, and so even after a year of working with this methodology and learning all the tools, the feedback part of it you mentioned a moment ago, didn't really matter to him. What mattered was he was able to turn numbers, which affected his bottom line and his bonus. And he was you know, and he wanted to be seen in terms of the board as being an excellent CEO and a career trajectory that would ever onward and upward and everything like that. And very much invested in his ego. But all that aside, it's what you bring to the business in terms of its bottom line contribution. Are we successful or not?
Yeah. And how does that play into your model and into your coaching? So my experience has been sometimes people, you know, one of my mentors gave me the term soft power, hard power. And hard power is holding people accountable and driving for results, and we're going to get it done no matter what, that sort of thing. And soft power is coaching, supporting, nurturing, making sure we're all understood. And, you know, he said that if you are too far to one side, you're going to cause difficulty. You got to be able to do both.
Sure, sure. I would say you just kind of named the yin and yang of performance. You've got to have a blend of the both. You can't just do the hard skills without the soft connection, the trust. That's where trust is.
Yes.
That's where resilience, that's where passion resides. Hello.
Yep.
So you've got to have a good efficient mix of the human touch skills along with the business production skills. If you don't blend it, you're not going to get the kind of results as possible. So how it connects into the model here, obviously, this result cycle on the bottom, you end with results. You can always talk about results, numbers, things you quantify, market share, profitability, cost reductions, et cetera. You're always able to talk about, encouraged to talk about, probably need to talk about results. How we get there is the kind of actions and behaviors we take and the impact we have on people. We get results through people. Very few people do the whole thing by themselves. They're not self-reliant. They work as teams. So this absolutely accommodates that, because you've got to keep your eye on that bottom line, the sideline, the upline, the downline, all the lines involved here, and be aware that you're going to be able to get results and be able to optimize those if you're also attending to the human side of the equation.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, and I actually think you're going to agree with the next question I'm going to ask. But I just want to raise it because I think it needs to be talked about directly. Well, first of all, let me stop for a minute and just remind our listeners that you can get Tom's most recent book, The Rise of the Coachable Leader, or his first book, The Heart of Coaching, at craneconsulting.com/books. But also, Tom is giving away 3 copies of his book, autographed, to the first 3 people who connect with him by email. And I should have written it down, but one more time, Tom, what is your email?
Sure. It's tgcrane@craneconsulting.com.
Great. And I'd also like to ask our listeners, if you are enjoying this conversation, please rate us on Apple or on your favorite platform. So, in my experience, there are leaders who are what I would refer to as conflict avoidant. And they hesitate essentially to say, if you don't shape up, you know, you're gone. And I wouldn't say it that way exactly, but, you know, it might be exactly using your model. I want to be helpful. You know, we need in order to support you, I want to give you some feedback. And you did this, this, and this. And one of the contingencies down the line might be if you're not able to pull that back together, it's going to impact your career or whatever. And I find that a lot of people avoid doing that. And I'm curious as to your comment about that.
I think you're right. I mean, it's a lot of people avoid conflict because of the fear, the concern, the way they want to hurt somebody. They don't want to stand out. They want to be the one who makes waves, etc. But when it comes to performance, people have a right to know where they stand. And if you're going to be transparent, if you're going to be truthful, if you're going to be authentic as a leader, gosh darn it, tell the truth. The idea is to tell it with respect. I need to be able to deliver feedback and not surprise you, not have you lose your job and you're wondering, well, where'd that come from? People should see the fact they're in the process of losing their job if that's what's actually happening. If they're not able to perform in that role, they could be in the wrong role. They don't have maybe the right resources. Maybe the expectations are not set. All kinds of things contribute to somebody's non-performance. But the idea is to have these compassionate, direct, confrontive conversations along the way so that you don't have to do an exit interview to find out why the person left or why they lost their job.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. For me, the conversation, I can't remember who it was, but I remember one of the thought leaders in leadership saying everyone should feel accepted and protected at all times, or secure and protected at all times. And that feels a little extreme, a little too much soft power that you really have to want to stay in. Yeah.
Not for me. I think that works. Did you see Tom Peters' article or new book that just came out maybe a week or 2 weeks ago?
I did not, no.
I had a note here on what the title was. It was something like Extreme Humanism. And he wrote it in context of COVID and the pandemic and people being disconnected and living apart and all of the kinds of additional stresses that that causes. But he's talking about how the pendulum needs to swing in the direction of having people feel safe and protected so that they can speak up and bring their best ideas.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that. But on the other hand, I think it's somewhat of a paradox because, let's say, 10 to 15% of the work population has a personality disorder. There's another 10 to 20% that have an anxiety disorder. You know, and there are some people who just, you know, want to do what they want to do, and they really don't care about other people. So if you're going to do that direct conversation, mm-hmm. if you're going to let people know, if you continue to walk in this way, you're going to fall off the cliff, they're not going to feel safe and protected at those times. So for me, that it's sort of a paradox about what's being said in the leadership space. I'm curious as to your reaction about that.
Well, if somebody is clinically provably has a psychological or an emotional disorder, then help them find the help they need to do, you know, what they need to do. Because you have somebody who is mentally ill or on the verge of being mentally ill doesn't mean that they don't need to also coexist in our culture. So get them the help they need. And then if you've done that and it still doesn't work out for other reasons, then, you know, they need to work someplace else.
Yeah. And by the way, I agree with you on that. But yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I interrupted.
So the people that are stubborn or I'm going to do it my way or the highway, those are the ones that you need to say, well, that's not how we're going to do things around here anymore. Maybe the coaching needs to be to our values as an organization, our code of conduct, how we are supposed to treat one another. If that's modeled from the top, effectively, leaders are casting a positive modeling. They're a positive example of that. They're a good role model of the core values. Then they've got the legitimacy to be able to coach others on doing that as well. You know, so there's always a way to have. I mean, you use the same process. You still sit down and have a conversation.
Yes.
The way you talk with them and the content you talk about, the way you talk about that content, how assertive you need to be, depends upon the individual and their responses.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you. I like having this conversation because it's, you know, I think we have a little bit of a different perspective, but actually I think we're probably in reality talking about the same thing.
I think we kind of are. It's how we talk about anything, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm curious as to what you see as the role of HR in terms of culture change. I know there are some times that leaders delegate culture change to HR, and I know both of us have the same opinion of that. So what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah. Thank you. That's a great question. First, my opinion about that. That's ridiculous.
Do you have any feelings about it?
I'll just stop right there. to delegate something that requires an attitude and a behavioral change to an HR program. Programs come and go. They have a beginning and an ending. This is not a program. It's a development process. HR needs to be a partner in the process. So when I go into an organization, I work with the HR team to have them feel like they are part of supporting this. They can model the way. Certainly, they'd want to be able to have access to the same skills and learn those as well. But it's their job to absolutely support from a systems standpoint all of the things where it affects the way people think about their relationships, their place in the business, the urgency, the appropriateness of the strategic focus, how they contribute to success. They see their role in all of that, and then make sure that the HR systems around training and development, the leadership bench, is developed in such a way as they're brought up to be coaches, open to giving and receiving feedback. So if you want to have a feedback-rich culture, you've got to have HR absolutely and intimately involved in changing the HR systems that accommodate, bring in, name, and highlight coaching is how we do things around here.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you're not walking the talk, nothing changes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, you look to your boss and they look to the boss and the boss and the boss and the boss and the CEO. Are they a model of all of this? Are they just giving it lip service? People see right through that directly. They know clearly, oh yeah, they got a 1 hour briefing on this and now they're using a couple of words. They're using the coaching word. Big deal. It doesn't count. They don't have credibility because they don't actually sit down and deliver feedback in a meaningful way. And they're certainly not coachable. They're the boss.
I agree.
So it's incongruent unless they show up as being part of this. You want the leaders to own this culture shift process so that they're the best role models, not perfect, but they're the best role models of working on themselves and developing themselves as a more highly communicative, more effective leader.
Yes. And so I recently published a podcast with a guest named Phil Dana, who talks about his company that he's with. It's called Dendrion. He mentions it in the program. And he was talking about the change that's required by the whole workplace equity and equality piece, and really talked about how his CEO took responsibility and walked the talk and, you know, is out there up front as opposed to delegating it and having workshops go on. But the CEO doesn't say anything. So that is really, really critical. I totally agree.
Yeah. One of the examples of a company that had a CEO just like that, who was first and foremost a role model, was a financial institution back in the Midwest. They were going through a significant change process, and the senior leadership team had decided to go through the heart of coaching first. Mm-hmm. We took them through the whole 2-day process. They said, this is so really powerful and helpful for us. We like to cascade it down through the whole organization. So after that was done and started, this CEO showed up opening. He would open the meetings, presentations, company addresses, and he would share his coaching contract. We have people write on and put on a 3x5 card, my behavioral description of the things I'm going to do to be a more effective coach. So they write their contract out. We laminate it. They've got that. And then the coach's credo on the backside. Then they carry it with them. Or they put an organizer at your desk, keep bumping into it as a way to remind themselves, oh, this is how I want to show up.
Absolutely. I love it. I love it. We haven't had this conversation before, but typically one of the things that I do is I have people meet with their stakeholders, their key stakeholders, and share their goals, and then find out whether or not it's the thing that they should be working on. And also, what do you want to see from me? Uh-huh. So, yeah, it's really one of the ways that I think about that is that the other people are your like internal market, and you can't just say my internal market doesn't know what they're talking about. I won't listen to them. You better listen to them because they can sink you if you don't act in such a way that motivates people to want to be on board with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it's all about being open to their feedback, digesting it, responding to it.
Absolutely. You know, as we wind down, I'm wondering if you have any, you know, final thoughts from this conversation for our listeners. What would be helpful for them to focus on?
Well, I have a firm belief based upon the experience of my own life experiences and then the CEOs I've worked with that lead organizations, that you will be no more effective as a coach. And a lot of people are aspiring and picking up coaching skills wherever they can, so they're more effective at coaching others. You're not going to be any more effective at coaching others than you are coachable. And the principal reason why people are not coachable, three letters, ego. So if there's anything I'd say as a place to start is understanding the impact of your own ego on needing to look right, to be right, to be correct, to be perfect, to not make mistakes, yada, yada, yada. It's a long list of things that our ego causes us to do. So if you can work on relaxing that ego and getting it under control and become more porous, more transparent, more opaque, and be able to, transparent so that you can actually show people that you're sincerely interested in developing yourself, which is an act of, you know, removing some of the control, the illusion of control that the ego has, they're going to be putting a good foot forward.
Yes. I love that term, illusion of control. I used to joke about people would say, how are you doing? And I'd say, I'm doing great. I have the illusion of control today.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's kind of what it is.
Yeah. So, Tom, it's been a real pleasure having you on board. And again, I learned a lot from your class and from your feedback model. I really appreciate having you on the show.
Super, Jordan. It's been fun being here with you. And hopefully we said some things that people can use.
Well, I hope we have as well.
Here we go.
So I'd like to remind everyone that you can get Tom's most recent book, The Rise of the Coachable Leader, or his first book, The Heart of Coaching, at craneconsulting.com/books. He's giving away three books to the first three people who email him. And one more time, Tom, what is the email?
tgcrane@craneconsulting.com.
Sounds good. And the Workplace Warrior podcast is sponsored by Workplace Warrior Incorporated, which is a consulting firm that provides executive coaching and leadership development. If you're a leader who wants to learn more about driving results without damaging relationships, you can connect with me at jordan@jordangoldrich.com. I want to invite everyone to please join us each week for a challenging conversation, hopefully a challenging conversation, about driving results without damaging relationships. Thank you all. Until next week.
Thank you for listening to Workplace Warrior, Drive Results Without Damaging Relationships. More information about today's episode, including show notes, can be found at workplacewarriorinc.com. Please rate and review our podcast on Apple Podcasts and share our podcast with any workplace warriors you know. Thanks again for listening.